Hey everyone, welcome back to Beyond the Numbers. I'm Josh, and this is the podcast where we look at our church, ministry, and even our personal life and ask the question, not what is the metrics, but more, is it healthy? Now, I don't know about you guys, but I am a thrill seeker. I love just about any type of thing. I mean, we're talking, you know, eventually one day I would love to go skydiving, but bungee jumping, skydiving, I love roller coasters. Theme parks are fantastic, but especially the roller coasters. And believe me, the bigger drops, the better. I love those type of things, the thrill, the adrenaline rush. I mean, nothing beats, you know, hitting that top of that point and being able to stare straight down and then everything just dropping. Man, there is no greater feeling. And let's be honest, while we love that thrill, the ministry can be like a roller coaster. I mean, there are moments where it seems like everything is going great within your ministry. Those leaders are doing exactly what you have trained them to do. You have people that you're discipling that are now discipling others. That student that you've been pouring into for so long seems like they finally understand. Those people that you've been praying for all of a sudden accept Jesus into their heart for the very, very first time and start to live a life that is transformed, going out and sharing the gospel and sharing with others. It can seem so amazing, that mountaintop point, and then comes the valley. And unlike the roller coaster, when you do the drop and it feels amazing, in the ministry, when you hit that drop and when you're in the valley, the feeling is completely different. That person that you've been pouring into says, hey, I'm gonna take a step back away from the church. I gotta reconfigure some things and figure new things out. Those people that you've been praying for, it seems like that prayer is just hitting those walls. Working in student ministry, you pour out to these students and then you see the choices that they make, which can only really be described as the stupidest of choices, but we've been there before and made those. But as you see them making those choices, you're just like, ah, why? And then to add to that valley, there's also another hole in the youth room wall. Ministry is thrilling, but it's also extremely exhausting. And maybe you're at that point where you've been going along for so long and you just feel like you are running on fumes. Maybe you're watching this video series and you are on your last leg. You're thinking about quitting or stepping away. You're like, I'm just so emotionally, physically, and maybe even spiritually exhausted. I have no idea how much I have left in my tank. Switching gears for just a half a second, I'm a big movie person. I love movies, and there's certain series that when I love it, I love it. Like, I collect just about everything, and one of my favorite series is Back to the Future. I have the mobile sets. I have, like, an advent calendar system for Back to the Future. As you can tell behind me, I have the Lego set for Back to the Future. I have that fake license plate, and I guarantee you, if you show me you have an actual working hoverboard from the movie, I will steal it and you will never see it again. But I love the movie and the fact that he can go back in time and he affects all these different changes within his family from the different interactions that he has. And it got me thinking, if I could go back in time, talk to my younger self, what are some of the things that I would change? I mean, maybe I would get out of relationships that I knew were toxic before I even got into them. Maybe I would, not maybe, but really make different financial decisions, invest in certain things that, you know, I didn't. And now looking back, I'm like, man, I could have been a multimillionaire. There are different choices that we would make, or at least I would make, if I could go back in time. But let's think about that for a moment when it comes to the ministry. What are different things that I would do or share or tell myself looking back at the beginning of my ministry experience? So if I had a DeLorean, if I could go back and talk to a younger me, there are a few things that I'd say, a few pieces of advice or different things that I wish I knew earlier. Not that it would have made the ministry easier, but it would have made ministry, myself, and those that I work with healthier. The truth is, I can't go back in time. I can't change those things. But maybe for some of you that are running on empty, some of you that you're just starting out in the ministry, maybe you can learn from some of my trial and errors before you make those trial and errors. Maybe you can glean some of this stuff and apply it to your ministry and make your ministry healthier than mine was. So if I could hop back in time, if I could jump into that DeLorean, let me walk you through some of the biggest lessons that I would pass along to myself and hopefully to you. The first is, I would tell myself it's okay to take calculated risks. When I first started, I played it super safe. And what I mean by that is, for me, I always struggled with the idea of failure. I don't want to fail. I don't want to make mistakes. And so for some people, it does one thing. Maybe they push themselves even harder. For me, I just play it safe. I keep it within my own bubble. I stay within my comfort zone. Why? Because if it's working, then there's no chance of it failing. But stepping outside of that comfort zone, stepping outside of that bubble, and taking calculated risks was something that I didn't do right away within the ministry. And when I say calculated risks, I don't mean like, hey guys, we're gonna hop on the top of the church bus, and while it's driving down the road, we're gonna surf on it. That's not a calculated risk. That's just stupid and maybe fun. But calculated risk for me means those spirit-led things where you feel like God is prodding you, but it's outside of your comfort zone. And so you pray it up, you do a bit of studying, you do a bit of research, but then you step out in faith on it and allow God to do the rest. Those are the calculated risks that I'm talking about. Maybe for some, it's that opportunity of a new outreach. And so you don't know how many students are going to show up. You don't know what your church is going to think. You don't know where the funds are going to come from, but you're feeling led to step out to a new area of outreach within your community. Or maybe it's like a missions trip or something. And you're like, man, this is completely out of my ballpark, but I'm really feeling like this is the direction that God is leading. If it were me when I first started off, I would be terrified and be like, heck no. Why? Because it could fail. But it's important to take those calculated risks. I mean, there's a level of Christianity that is preparing, planning, but then stepping out and saying, God, I trust that this is the direction that you're leading me in. I mean, looking back, there are events that I missed out on because I played it safe. There are opportunities to evangelize or discipleship that I missed out on because I played it too safe. There are outreaches and new ministry opportunities that I missed out on because I was so happy within my comfort zone. I would challenge myself and maybe you that calculated risks are important. And instead of sitting there saying, what if this fails? Instead ask, God, what if you could use this for your glory? God, what if you could use this to change and save others' lives? And then surrender it to him and step out on faith. Another lesson I would teach myself is to shepherd faithfully, but not to carry what isn't mine to carry. When I first started out in the ministry, I carried my emotions on my sleeve. It was obvious. And I'm not talking about anger or upsetness or anything like that, but more than anything, I put too much emotional weight on me. I cared about the students that I ministered to. I cared about the kids that I ministered to and my leaders, but I cared about them to a point where I wore every decision that they made and every choice that they made as a personal weight on me. If I had a student that I had been discipling over and over and over again, and I gave everything in those times that I had for that student and taught them the Bible and preached to them in a way that God wanted me to, if I was faithful with everything that God wanted me to do, and then they went out and made a decision that was contrary to the Bible and contrary to Christianity, which sometimes they're students, they're going to do that, I would look at it as a personal failure to me. I would keep myself up at night going, what could I have done differently? How am I failing as a pastor and as a shepherd? because of the decisions they made on their own personal time. And for me, it just wore me down and wore me out quicker than an all-nighter. I was emotionally drained because everything that they did, I put on me. Every mistake that they made, I put on me. I wouldn't put their successes on me, but I would wear every single mistake until it just beat me down and beat me over and over and over again. And one of the biggest things that I had to learn is that as a minister, as a ministry lead, as someone that is working within any church, organization, or ministry, you are shepherding, but you can only shepherd what God has given you to do, and you have to be faithful with what God has given you to do. But then once you do that, you can't beat yourself up over decisions that people make when it has no bearing on what you have done or what you have said. I think there's that emotional weight, but another thing that I learned through that, though, was I was lacking faith in God. And what I mean by that is this: when I'm wearing every emotional weight of their decision, I'm literally saying, hey, God, I'm not trusting in you with them. I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of a big slap in the face for God. We don't realize we're doing that, but that's exactly what we're doing. When I am worrying about every decision that someone is making and wearing that, I'm literally saying, God, I'm going to do everything that you've called and equipped me to do. I'm going to do it 100%, but then God, I'm going to worry and I'm going to stress and I'm going to hold on to everything and not give it to you. The truth is that no matter how great of a lead you are, ministry is doing everything that God has called us to do and then surrendering those people, those situations, those ministries into God's hands because he knows more and he can do more. And the truth is that he loves these people even more than you do. You don't have to wear the weight of every decision that they make. Shepherd and lead the way that God has called you to do it, and then surrender the rest to him. And know that he is going to guide, and that he is going to lead, and he can do it so much more better than you can. Starting out in the ministry, and let's be honest, several years into the ministry, there's definitely a level of immaturity, and I can tell you one of the biggest things that I have struggled with, and talking with a lot of different next-gen leaders, this is something that a lot do struggle with. Some voice it and some don't, and I think even pastors across the board do, and that's this idea of comparing ourselves. It is so easy to compare yourself to what other people are doing. And I spent my early years in the ministry comparing my ministry, my teachings, my games, my events to the youth ministry down the road, to the youth ministry across the country. And the truth is that most of the time when you're doing this comparison, you are always on the losing end. You're always looking, saying, wow, they do it so much better. Wow, they have so many better ideas. Wow, they have so many more students and sometimes so much more money for those students. But for me, I would sit there and start trying to replicate everything that they did because in my eyes, what they were doing looked successful. They were getting the numbers. They were getting the excitement. They were getting the buy-in. And so maybe I can just copy everything that they're doing. But the truth is that not one of us are alike. God designed us unique. God designed us amazing, and he has plugged you in where he knows you need to be. And so because of that, they don't need the youth pastor down the road. They don't need the kids pastor down the road. They don't need the pastor, you know, across the country. They need you. With all the equippings that God has given you, with the call that God has given you to pour into those people that he has chosen you to lead. So stop comparing yourself to everyone else. The truth is, my view and my actions and the way that I go about building disciples may look different than yours. And if it's biblical, then it's not wrong. It's just two different personalities and two different systems. And most of the time, it's two different cultures. The way that I minister to students in Georgia might be completely different than someone in Oregon. And that's okay. But the biggest thing that we have to learn is not to try to copy ourselves and our programs based on other people, based on what others look as successes, but to be faithful with what God has given us. If he calls you, he has called you for a purpose. If he has put you where you are, he has put you there for a purpose. And the problem is that comparison comes in and it's a thief. All comparison does is rob us of our joy. It blinds us to the work that God is actually doing. Oftentimes, when we start comparing, we miss what he's doing because we're so focused on what other people are doing. I'll tell myself, hey, Josh, get your focus off of others and get your focus on the God. Because in the end, that is what really matters. You're not called to be a copy of another pastor and another ministry. You're called to be a follower of Christ. And from comparison, well, then we go to the people-pleasing side. I think one of the big things that I've learned over the years is, Josh, stop trying to please everyone. The truth is, you will never be able to please anyone. But believe me, I spent a good portion of my beginning years trying to do exactly that. Whether it was like fear of getting in trouble or ticking off the wrong person. I mean, in some churches, if you were that right person and you knew who to make the right complaints to, you could get a whole entire ministry changed. And so there was a level of that. I'm not saying that I would sugarcoat the gospel. I'm not saying that I would change anything biblically. But what would happen is, certain students, certain leaders would make negative remarks or make suggestions that were more than suggestions. And all of a sudden, I was changing my worship set list. I was changing the way the lights and the decorations look. I would scrap a whole bunch of games to do the games that they, that one or two person that were making those comments would specifically want. I would start making shifts and changes here and there because of what one or two specific loud voices would be saying. One of them didn't like something, and suddenly everything within the ministry started to shift. I think when I fully realized the fact that you will never please everyone, it was around the time of COVID. And there were all these different restrictions and everything like that. And when our youth ministry started meeting again early on in the process of COVID, there were lots of restrictions and different things like that that were just overreach. But we would sit there and we'd be doing youth ministry, and I'd get some of my friends, some of my parents, some of my leaders, everything like that would be upset if we didn't follow 100% of the restrictions that were put on us. And then I would have the other half of my leaders, students, friends, and all that kind of stuff that would be mad if we didn't ignore all of the restrictions and things that were put on us. So it was please one side and make the other side upset, or we would please the other side and get the other side ticked at us. And if you chose to do like a 50-50, even that made both sides mad. And the truth is, I walked away going, no matter what I do here, someone's going to get mad. No matter what decision I made, people were going to get ticked. Bottom line. And you know what? That's okay. I had to learn that it's okay and that I was not called to please everyone. Do you know the biggest thing that you're called to do? To obey God. Are we obeying God with the call that he has put on us? I'd look back at my younger self and be like, hey, Josh, obey God. Follow what he's leading. Follow what he's saying. And stop trying to please and change everything over some people complaining, some people wanting something different. Follow what God is leading you to do. Man, starting off in the ministry, as we've already said, there's a level of pride there that happens. But for me, there was not just that level of pride, but there were the things that I knew that I was good at. And I knew that I was amazing at multitasking. I was. I'm really good at it. I could be sitting there taking payments for a trip, answering a student's questions, meeting a parent, getting a meal ready, praying for another student, listening to another student explain how life is just falling apart on them, and then also in the very, very background, there's another student that wants to try this really cool trick, and I'm helping them do it all at once. And I was amazing at it, juggling so many different pieces. If I could go back in time and talk to younger Josh, I would say, hey, Josh, pay attention more. It was actually my wife who was the first one that brought to my attention, Josh, you are not the best multitasker, which was a shock to my system. I completely disagreed until I realized in those moments where I was juggling all those things, that person that was paying me for the trip, I was taking that money and putting it off to the side and forgetting where I put it. That meal that I was doing, it was burning. That person that I was praying for, I was only half praying and I didn't even say any of the things that they had requested. That parent that I was engaging in, I wasn't really engaging with them. You know, like they felt like I was just ignoring them. That student that was sharing their issues and their problems, for me, it seemed like I was fully into it, but for them, it looked like I was just half ignoring them because I was busy doing everything else and not fully paying attention to them. In essence, they were hearing, your problems are not big enough for my full attention. And that student that wanted to do that really, really cool trick that I helped them along with while I was multitasking, it was setting their hand on fire with alcohol in it. Yes, I set my pastor's kid hand on fire. They're fine. They're just like a blister or whatever. Big mistake. I am not a good multitasker. I learned I need to pay attention more. And for some of us, we just need to be more aware. Why? Because even if you are the best multitasker, when you're multitasking, you're not giving any task 100%. And there are those ministry moments where our focus needs to be on those that we're ministering to, where our focus needs to be on that one that needs prayer. And we need to make sure that we are pouring everything out that we have out on that student in prayer. When we're engaging with parents, we want them to know that they have our full attention. Why? Because nothing screams issues than a parent talking to a leader and a leader only half listening to them. If that's how we interact with the leader, imagine what they think we're doing with their kids on a trip far away. And you've got 40, 50, 60, 100 students. How do they know you're not going to lose one of their kids? Did that for a half a second. Young Josh, lessons we learned. But still, for that student that is pouring everything out, more than anything, they deserve our focus. Why? Because the truth is that as leaders, we are an example of Christ. As we've talked about through this entire series, we are an ambassador of him. We are showing these people who Jesus is. And if they're talking to us and they only get half of our attention, what kind of example does that set for their heavenly Father? When God's busy, he only gets half of your attention. How many more things would I be aware of? How many more moments would I be able to really experience? How many more people could I truly pour out to if I stopped multitasking and paid more attention? It seems like, yes, you know, you won't get as much done. Yes, you won't be able to do 100 different things on a ministry night. But guess what? When you choose to pay more attention, the impacts that you make have a deeper and deeper effect on those that you're pouring out to. I'd say, Josh, pay attention more. I think one of the final things really off the top of my head that I would share with my younger self and with all of you guys that are listening is to realize that everyone has a story, even those youth kids that annoy the snot out of you, even those leaders that continue and continue to maybe show up late, not be fully prepared, complain a bit. I'm not saying you dust those things over. You forget about those things. But realize that everyone has a story. Many years ago, when I was a young junior high pastor, our ministry was going great, and it was growing strong, and we had students that were excited to come out, and there was this one new kid. And halfway through the lesson, this kid started asking questions that really had no bearing over the lesson. But I saw what they were doing immediately. They were trying to rise up and rile up our students. And it succeeded. I mean, it's junior high ministry. So, of course, like any little thing is like, woo, woo. You know, they're getting distracted by everything. And this person was feeding it. But I continued to lead with elegance, with strength. And then next week, they did it again. Stupid comments here, stupid comments there, a little mumbling, little this, that, or the other. And I would spar with them a little bit. And then the following week, it was the same thing. And the following week, it was the same thing. And soon this one student became one of my most problematic students. I'd see them show up and be like, ah, here we go. Is today going to be a better day? Nope, it's not going to be a better day. And while we have those students that drain us and wear us out and test every bit of our patience, it started going overboard for me. In fact, it reached a point where I'm embarrassed to say, but hey, full transparency. I actually hit a point where I remember one of the days when I was praying before the student showed up. My prayer was literally, God, I pray that this student doesn't show up today. And I say that with a smile on, but deep within my heart, that was my thing. I'll admit it. I prayed that a student wouldn't show up to youth ministry because they were too problematic. Can I tell you, it was a huge mistake. God really slapped me across the back of the head with that one. It was a week or two later that someone close to this student started sharing about their story. And how this student came from a broken home and a broken situation. And because of that, they would act out. They would say things. And yet, this youth ministry that they got plugged into in this junior high group that they chose to continually come out to of their own free will was the one consistent thing that they had in their life. And despite how on the outside it looked like there weren't a whole lot of changes, on the inside, there were deep changes that God was starting to do. And when I heard that story, it broke me because this very same student that God was getting a hold of was the same student that I had prayed against coming out to the ministry. I'm not going to make that mistake again, because the truth is some of your most problematic people sometimes have a deeper story and a deeper reason of why they're doing that. And if we bug out too quickly, if we get mad at them too easily, if we get frustrated, if we pray that they don't show up, the truth is that God is sending them to your ministry. He's sending them there for a reason. And we have to be good stewards of what God is giving us as leaders. We have to be careful that we're not pushing away, one, the gifts that God has given us, but the people that need it the most. I mean, someone greater than me once said that the church is meant to be a hospital for the broken. And if we're upset because we're getting broken people into our ministries, then maybe there's a shift that needs to happen within us. Everyone has a story. And maybe sometimes what we need to see is that God is doing something bigger than what we can see on this plane. We need to be faithful again to what he has given us. Some of you are listening to this, and you're listening to even some of those things, and you're thinking, I've been there. I've done that. I've made that mistake. Even as I'm giving this list, you might have different ideas or list or choices that you made in the past that you're like, I learned from this one, and you're creating your own list. And maybe as it's going along, you feel like more than anything, you're failing in the ministry. The truth is that we are imperfect beings. We are doing the best that we can. And if you are doing the best that you can to continue to follow God and follow his lead and pour him out on others, then you're being faithful with what God has given you. So don't beat yourself up, but learn from those things. The truth is, you can be tired and worn out and you're still called. You can be overwhelmed and feel like you're failing, and yet still be where God wants you to be. I mean, look at the biblical examples all throughout the Old and the New Testament of those that failed, those that fell short, or those that felt like nothing was happening, and then suddenly there was a break. But here's the biggest thing. You don't have to pretend that you're invincible, because you're not. More than anything, you just need to be faithful. I can't go back and tell my younger self these things. These are lessons that are learned most of the time the hard way. And there are different lessons that you have learned the hard way. But we can also glean from each other's wisdoms, each other's strengths, and each other's failures to make ourselves and our ministries better in the long run. But can I tell you the best thing? The biggest thing is that God is not done with you. Not by a long shot. So what are some action steps that we can pull away from this? What are some changes that we can start making today? I want to challenge you with the first thing is to look back, like I did today. Sometimes when I get out of a situation, when I step away, when I go on vacation, or when I'm sitting in someone else's sermon or message, that's when God speaks to me the most. Look back. Maybe think about a lesson that you would teach yourself. A lesson that you would learn, because when we start focusing on that, suddenly we start to become aware of all these different things around us. Can I tell you, when I started writing this, I was like, I can only think of like one or two things. And then there were so many that I had to pick like the top. But it only started when I started saying, what are the lessons that I've learned? And actually start with just one. And that's when God's like, no, you've learned a lot more. I had to teach you a whole lot more along the way. And that's okay. And the more that we do that, the more that God makes us aware of the things that he is doing around us. Then look within. One of the biggest struggles that I see out of a lot of next gen ministers, but across the board, is that comparison thing. Start looking within. If you realize you've compared yourself, maybe on the end of failing, like, I am not as good as these ministries, confess it to God. God, I don't want to do this. I'm not a carbon copy of someone else. I want to be the minister, the leader that you have called and created me to be. But can I tell you that comparison actually goes the other way too? When everything is successful, when everything is great, we can look at other ministries and say, how am I doing this so much better than everyone else? I must be amazing. And we kind of build up that little throne that we sit in. Comparison as a whole is just going to build you a bigger hole. Confess it to God. Look deep within and say, God, this isn't the person that I want to be. I want to be who you have called and created me to be for the people that you have called and created me to shepherd over at this time and at this point. Start looking around. Do you see kind of like a theme here? Look. Look around. Like I said, being aware, look around at all those that are around you, the interactions that you have on a daily basis, the conversations that you're having and who's listening in on those conversations, the choices that you're making visibly in front of other people. Start looking around and being aware, because the truth is that so many different levels of discipleship happen outside of the church. When we're around our students, when we're in conversations, when we're in the process of hanging out with others or grabbing a meal with others, start looking around and being aware and living in those moments. Because while we're focused on the teaching that we have tonight and I'm eating out with a bunch of students now, God has me plugged in now with those students that I'm eating with. And so I need to be aware and I need to be present and I need to give my focus there, because God has plugged me in there for this moment. And so I need to do the best that I can to lead those that I'm around at this very second. And then the final thing is to look ahead. Maybe you take risks all the time. Maybe they're not spirit-led risks. Maybe you are like me and you love your comfort zone. Everything is safe and everything is good. I want to challenge you to start saying, okay, God, what is one spirit-led risk that I can take this month? This year, with myself, with my walk, with the ministry that I help or oversee or lead, what is one big spirit-led risk that I can make? Then pray up on it. Make sure that it's truly God leading you and not yourself leading you. Put time and effort into it. Don't just do it off the fly of the cuff. But then step out and say, okay, God, if this is where you're leading me, if this is what you want me to do, I'm going to step out on faith and do it. And watch what God is going to do from those moments that you trust in him and take risks that only come through him. Here's the bottom line. Ministry is rough. Ministry is messy. You will make mistakes. You will. It's okay. It doesn't give you like an excuse to, I can just make as many mistakes as I want. No, but you will make mistakes. There are times that you will feel like you failed. There are times where you will be tired out and worn out. But God wastes none of it if we allow him to continue to set the pace and the focus and the goal for us. And if everything that we're doing is what God wants us to do. The truth is, every scar, every lesson, every failure that you experience, they can become fuel for what God is calling you to do now. So for those tired leaders, for those leaders that you are running on empty, don't give up. Don't burn out. Don't believe the lie that this is it and that you're done. Hope is still alive for each and every one of you. My tired leaders, because there are moments where I am that way. But God is not done with you. And the truth is that God's strength becomes even more evident in our weakness. But we have to choose to show up and continue following after God and doing what he has called us to do. I hope that there was something in today's little flashback, little back to the future that you got something out of. I hope more than anything that you can learn from my mistakes and failures so that you don't make the same ones. But if as we're going through this, you're like, here's one. Like I said, I have a list. I've been in it long enough and I've messed up long enough. I would love to hear one or two of your comments, one or two of the things that you would go back and change, the things that you have learned. I put this out as a question on several of the different youth pastor and next gen ministry boards on Facebook. And can I tell you, I put it out like a week or two before this video ever hit, before I ever recorded, I should say. And man, like the comments are still coming in. Some of them have like 60 plus comments of different people sharing different advice. Some of it's the same. And so, you know, you're not the only one to struggle with those things or make those mistakes. For other people, it's like brand new things that I didn't even think of. The truth is that there are always things that we will look back and say, I could have done this differently. And thank God that there is grace and there is mercy. Because he can still, as I said, take every one of those mistakes and turn them around for his good. But share some of those with me. I would love to hear it. I would love to, maybe if you can even share what you learned through it. You can be as vague or as specific as you want with those stories, but share them in the comment section here. If there was something that jumped out at you with this or you know another leader that needs to hear it, do me a favor and share this. Like and subscribe to check out the rest of our content. And next week, I'm really excited because we're pulling in a few different leaders. We're going to be doing some of our voices in the field. And we're asking these leaders kind of the same question. If you could look back in time, what would you tell your younger self when you first started out in the ministry? What are some of the mistakes and the failures? But more importantly, what are some of the successes and the things that God has used? I love these opportunities because it's voices that I would never hear from and you would never hear from, and yet their stories are so impactful. Their stories sometimes are clear representations of what our own life and our own experiences are like. But most importantly, I always walk away from those interviews a bit more changed and transformed through what God is doing through other leaders, and he uses that to transform me as well. Then, the week after, we're diving into episode 10 of our series. We're reaching the end, the finish line of season one of this. And so if you've stuck along with all of our videos and stuff, I appreciate it. But we're jumping into the gospel truth and how one of the most healthiest things that you can do is build your ministry on the foundation of the Word of God, because the rest is sinking sand. And the problem is that too many churches have built up huge buildings, huge ministries on sand that's sinking. I'll share what I've been learning in interviews as I talk with many churches across America and what I've seen and heard, sadly, from a lot of these churches. And even within my own ministry experience, how more than anything, the gospel is what matters in the authority of God's word. It'll be another great episode that I don't want you guys to miss. But until then, I want to challenge you. Today, lead not from the mistakes that you've made, but by keeping your eyes on Christ. Continue to step out and realize, yes, we prepare, yes, we plan, but also we rely on the one who is bigger and greater than us to lead us and to guide us. Thank you, guys.